Houston.
Ruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and it's time for So What's Your Story. It's the coolest place on the dial because it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, along with our guest relations representative and very key team player, Shannon McKerchy. Listen up, boomers. The song Love Hurts, with its throbbing pulse and heart-rending lyrics, was composed by Budlo Bryant before the Everly Brothers promoted it to the pop chart stardom in July of 1960. In its literal form, love, the kind brushed with intimacy and hopes, can and oftentimes hurt deeply. But as storytellers, we know how love that hurts can apply to a litany of love-inspired contexts. And though we may want to forget about them, they are episodes too good to pass up. As stories, that is, and too meaningful not to share. My guest will demonstrate how meaningful the aforementioned theme can be, just as she captured our attention and our hearts when she shared the story about Ariana, her daughter, on May 7th of this year. She's back because she's a masterful teller, a friend and supporter of this program, and a terrific human being. Annie Garcia is the executive director and founder of OpHeart, and the mother of Hugo and Ariana, her own heart warrior. After 6-week-old Ari was diagnosed with transposition of the great arteries, Annie and her husband Sergio spent over 8 weeks in the pediatric intensive care unit as baby Ari fought for her life. This harrowing experience and rescue of their daughter left Sergio and Annie with a profound sense of gratitude and an indescribable need to pay their blessings forward. Now, having worked in product development and having used 3D printing for prototyping purposes, Annie approached their surgeon, Dr. Enrique Garcia, to solicit his opinion about whether technology had use in preoperative preparation. In short, this magical inquiry prompted her relentless research journey into the current application of 3D printing in pediatric cardiology worldwide. OpHeart is the culmination of that voyage. OpHeart was founded and anchored by this very special mom and dad's commitment to helping families of children with CCHD, that's critical congenital heart disease, to make real differences in their lives. And he graduated from Rice University and UT Law School and practiced finance law at Meyer Brown before moving to Spain to begin a product development company. Annie, good evening. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back. How you doing?
Wonderful. How can I not be doing well when you talk me up so well? I love this.
I know.
My ego feels so good.
You said earlier you have low energy, and I just realized I can't even talk tonight, and I'm trying so hard. Energy. I think the older we get, 10 o'clock seems a lot older, doesn't it?
We're going to get
an earlier gig, but we're so happy you're here. And OpHeart is something that I'm fascinated by. I've asked you a lot of questions about it. I read your site all the time to learn more, and there's so much more to learn. Part of OpHeart's mission is to help CCHD families by helping them find the resources and to really maintain the hope that they need to help their own heart warriors. But tell us more about the critical importance of 3D printing. That's something I'd like listeners to understand. Tell us about the 3D printing.
3D printing is really fascinating because in such a short time, it's developed and evolved so rapidly so that now doctors are able to go and take the data that they gather in a typical process of evaluating a patient, looking at MRI and CT scans, and they're able to take that data and they're able to go and upload it into a software program and change it from 2D data to 3D data and then actually print a model of a child's heart, which just opens up all sorts of doors for them in terms of treatment options and has – just the benefits reverberate throughout right. not only that surgery, but a child's life.
Yeah.
It's amazing, amazing technology. And in comparison to what hospitals have to spend to take care of these babies, it's just a drop in the bucket in terms of cost.
And how's Ari doing? How's your daughter doing?
She is doing really well. You know, it's funny. We just celebrated her first birthday, and about 10 months ago, we would never have thought that we would reach this milestone. And we look at her now, and there's no outward signs of what she's been through. The scar is barely visible. But, you know, I actually just spent that whole day crying because I remembered, you know, what a journey it's been for us. But she's doing wonderfully.
And you refer to her as your heart warrior. You refer to heart warrior as a label given to the pediatric babies, the children who are suffering from these congenital heart diseases. How did you come up with the term heart warrior?
Well, that's something actually that's widely used in the community. And I actually grappled with it a fair amount because commented to me that she felt like it was too violent, that there was a better term for it, like heart vanquisher, or she speaks Spanish, so she said conquistadora.
Yeah.
And I agree with her, but that's the lingo, the term of art, and it conveys very quickly to all that these babies are different.
Yeah. Well, warrior is a great word, I think. It's bold, it's direct, it really does work. It works. It just works. We're going to be talking about contributing to Up Heart in just a little bit, but let's move to your first story. Love Hurts is not a pretty-sounding theme, but in this narrative about the courtship with your husband, humor rules, and we can sure use that, right? We can all use that. We can use some humor, Annie. Let's hear that story.
Well, this is actually this is a kind of two different takes on one theme. So prior to meeting my now husband, I had been married before, and I actually met my husband Sergio when I was previously married, and there was a certain amount of chemistry there, but nothing obviously happened, and we both went our own ways, and I ended up getting a divorce. And we bumped into each other at a Starbucks, of all places, between our two buildings in the tunnel. I know, really. It's the beginning of a rom-com. Mm-hmm. And we bumped into each other, immediately recognized each other. And I was, you know, freshly divorced, had just bought a house, had just gotten a dog, and I was all excited, and I told him all of this, almost a stranger, and, you know, walked away. And a couple of days later, I got an email from him, and I didn't realize this at the time. I didn't appreciate the fact that this is not in his nature to actually, you know, pursue somebody. And so, but in the way he worded it, it was very casual, and it actually, I didn't even realize what was going on. And it took another 6 months before we had our first date when I realized that he was interested. And so we had our first date. It was Christmas Eve. I had just had my wisdom teeth removed, and we went to one of the Ruggles restaurants, Ruggles Green, with both of our dogs on Christmas Eve, because it was the only day I was sure that I would not have any problems in my office. I was working on a really big case or a big transaction at the law firm, and so I scheduled it after my surgery and before Christmas, strategically. But I didn't appreciate the fact that the entire time we were on this date that apparently I was drooling soup all over because my mouth was still numb from the surgery. But we had this wonderful date, and it was just these hours that we spent talking to each other. And I remember the next day I was meant to drive to North Carolina to visit my best friend. And my plans were derailed when Sergio and I started talking on Christmas Day, and it was another 8 hours before we got off the phone. It was too late to leave. So then the next day I get in the car, and we talk from New Orleans all the way to Atlanta. I'm on the phone with him. And it just kind of went like that. It was just this, you know, this one of these wonderful, the beginning of love. And I knew I was head over heels for this guy. But I think I'm probably pretty typical, like most women. And so my timeline was, you know, I think pretty standard. It was like, you know, 2 months in, you know, we had had all these great experiences. We had traveled to Vermont together. He was a really big salsa dancer, and I took salsa lessons and surprised him with the fact that I was, you know, now a salsera like him, not nearly at the same level, but, and I had all these expectations that he was on the same timeline as I was. But 2 months in, I tell him, and, you know, we start having this conversation about what love is. And he tells me very directly that for him, love is forever. And he can't, if he's not able to commit to me forever, then he's not going to tell me that he loves me. And so it seemed reasonable. I mean, I like the idea that if you love somebody that you're in it forever. And so I was relatively patient, and we, you know, we kept on going, and every couple of months we'd have to have a heavy conversation and touch base with one another about where we were. And I'd say, I love you. And he would kind of stroke my arm and say, well, I'm really fond of you. Or he'd come up with more creative ways to express affection, but it was never, you know, it was never the same thing. And so things progressed, and we ended up moving in together. And then we decided we wanted to travel. And we both decided we were going to quit our jobs and move to Europe together. So this was a really big deal. And I thought, well, surely he loves me, right? He wouldn't do this if he didn't love me. But
well,
but
he was really fond of you.
He liked me a lot, kid. A chuck on the chin. And so, but, you know, he hadn't said it. He continued not to say it. And I was getting, you know, any women's magazine would tell you, red flags everywhere. Get out of this relationship. But I couldn't, because it was, I mean, he was everything. He had all of these qualities that I didn't even know that I wanted. Like he is incredibly handy. He's, he can repair anything. He's good with computers. He is nice to animals. He's just a really good guy. And so I waited it out, and we decided we were going to move, and we went into a storage unit. We put all our stuff in a storage unit. I sold my house in Houston. He leased his out. And we put our stuff in a storage unit. And even when we were putting the stuff in the storage unit, I was thinking strategically, like, okay, so if this doesn't work, how am I going to get my stuff back? And so I marked my boxes, and I tried to put them on one side with the idea that he would go in the storage unit, pull his stuff out, and then I would come in after him and then move to, like, I don't know, Boise or something. I would need a complete change of scenery after this, because I would be completely heartbroken from it. But we moved to Spain, and we kept on talking, and still, you know, the same spiel. And it really was, it was about a year and a half of love really hurting, because to have to put yourself out like that, not on a, you know, every 3 week basis, but like I told him regularly that I loved him, and to not have that reciprocated and not said back to you, and the insecurity that comes with not knowing where you stand in an easy way. I mean, it's a very easy thing. I love you. Oh, I love you too. Right. That's an easy way to say, okay, we're cool, we're good. But for him, it wasn't that. It was, I love you, and I'm not going anywhere ever. And that's it. And so it wasn't until July 2nd, it was shortly before the 4th of July, that he gave me a ring, and he said, I love you. And that was it. But that was pain. That was very painful. Well, year and a half.
So let me understand this. You have the typical woman has a 2 months standard allotted time for what?
Well, look at any rom-com, like Meg Ryan, like they're within, I mean, nowadays it's like 2 weeks and people love each other and they're moving in together. Yeah, uh-huh. I think maybe I'm even a little bit old-fashioned by
Shannon,
saying 2 months.
How long do you give a guy? You give him 2 months? Never mind. Shannon is just, what do you give a guy? 2 minutes? 2 weeks?
I don't even say yes
hours?
To a date, so I don't know.
She's
just a heartbreaker.
Right?
I just avoid this.
But 2 months, right? 2 months.
I think 2 months. 2 months, and then you're like, you're moving in together at 6 months, and then a year you're engaged. Yeah, right, I mean, right. I think that is market.
That was probably right, and I was wrong.
Right, and you love the fact that he was handy. That was important.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't even know that I loved that. Right. But being with a man is that who he can figure anything out. It's things are broken, and he fixes it. That is the nicest thing.
Yeah, I'm handy, too. You know, a wrench to me is where cattle are raised. You know, this is Hank Rubicek with Shannon McCurchy with guest teller Soup Drooler, founder of Op Heart, Annie Garcia. So what's your story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM can you hear stories like this. Houston and 89.5 in Galveston, 90.3 with our friends in Livingston, or KPFT.org if you're listening online. But whatever channel you chose to get here, we are glad that you are here. You know, Annie, in my mind, another one of Op Heart's missions is to do what 17th century English writer John Bunyan believed, and that is that you have not lived until you have done something for someone that you can never repay. And on a very, very serious note, I think that the work of Op Heart can never be repaid fully by those fortunate enough to have really reaped the magnificent benefits it offers. It really does. And we're going to become a little more poignant here in a few minutes, talking about raising money for Op Heart. We'll be talking about Ari in just a moment. But no one has the benefit of having Shannon McCurchy on the team, and no one ever will. Shannon, tell us about Ariana Barrios, our guest teller for next week.
Well, Ariana.
Make it short.
Well, she's
2 months max.
She won the Moth Story Slam for Love Hurts, and she grew up in France and has traveled to about 50 countries. And she's very interesting and great teller, indeed.
Right. And she has an accent, just like people from Louisiana. Okay.
No.
Shannon, just joking. Okay, Shannon, tell us about all the reasons why we should visit our fabulous Facebook page, please.
Well, you'll
find...
Other than
the fact that you're brilliant and you write it, tell us why.
You'll find information on our fabulous guest tellers every week, such as Annie, and information about upcoming storytelling events around town, and articles about everything storytelling, such as an article about the art of storytelling according to the founders of StoryCorps and Humans of New York, and Oliver Sacks on storytelling, the curious psychology of writing.
Beautiful, beautiful. And please like us on the way out.
And also about our upcoming book events.
Yeah.
By yours truly.
Can I say just a few words about
that?
Sure,
sure. Go ahead.
I just, you know, I'm so
plug humble. Away. It's
so
your
humble.
Show.
Listen, I want everybody to show up. July 17th at 7 o'clock p.m., Brez's Bookstore is kind enough to host a book signing, a book that I wrote of the same name of this show, with a colon, Discovering the Story in You. So what's your story? Discovering the Story in You. I'm very proud of it, and they're very kind in hosting a book signing. I'm expecting a very nice crowd, and you don't have to buy a book. I absolutely promise that, but come on out, and I'd love to meet you. Those of you who are following the show, even though if you don't, you're not listening. But tell your friends, come on out, 7 o'clock, July 17th. Shannon's going to put all that stuff that you need to know on our Facebook. And be sure to visit our new program site, www.sowhatsyourstory.info, for other great pieces of information about storytelling and a little bit more about the show. And Shannon, let's not forget our sponsor.
Yep, Hank, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is hands down the best storytelling group in the state. They meet the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center. That's 1475 West Gray.
Thank you, Shannon. You know, continuing with Love Hurts, your next story, Annie, is about your daughter, and it contains a tone quite different from your first story. You want to tell us a little bit about that, or you want to just sort of jump into it?
Well, it's one of the things that in a conversation that my then boyfriend and I had shortly before he proposed. He had already bought the ring and he was just waiting for the right moment. We were talking about family, and he said to me at that moment, and it was one of the nicest conversations we've ever had, and he said to me that he can't imagine a love stronger than that between a mother and her child. And I thought it was a beautiful thing to say, but I didn't really understand it, and it was only with this experience with my daughter that I had to
share it with us.
So my daughter is not my first child. I have another child who somehow gets neglected for obvious reasons because he is not a heart warrior. But I had my first child in 2013, and it was this magnificent experience. It was, I'd always kind of, I was one of these kids Well, I don't even know if that's right because I don't know if there are, this is a class of children. I would walk around with a shirt or with a pillow under my shirt and pretend I was pregnant when I was like 5 years old, which probably freaked out the neighbors a little bit. But I had always wanted to be pregnant. I always thought there was something magical about it. And so shortly after Sergio and I got married, I got pregnant and I had Hugo. And it was amazing. It was this beautiful experience. And we had already decided that we wanted two children. And so when Hugo was about 6 months, I became pregnant with Ari. And everything seemed just as ideal with that pregnancy as it was with my son Hugo. And the delivery was amazing. It was 45 minutes long. we actually ended up delivering her by ourselves because the midwife didn't make it in time. And it was one of the most magical experiences of my life. And for the first 6 weeks of her life, everything seemed just like it should be. We had this beautiful, healthy baby girl. She was putting on weight. Her brother was, you know, amazing with her. And we had changed from a three-person family to this four-pack. And everything seemed just like it should be, except occasionally in the evenings, Ari would have trouble breathing. And I would go, it'd be 3 a.m, and I'd start getting worried, and I'd go online, and I'd start, you know, entering search terms. And everything indicated that this was completely normal, and there were all sorts of home remedies. And so I'd go through the list of things to do, put Vicks VapoRub under her nose, put her in the shower with steam, clear out her nose with this suction device. And one time, it always worked, except there was one time when it was a lot harder to get her to breathe normally again. And then there was the second time when I actually was asleep and my husband was taking care of her. And when I woke up in the morning, she was crying. And I assumed it was because she was hungry. And he told me that she had been like that all night and that he was starting to get a little bit worried. And my husband is one of the most calm, he's the last guy to sound the alarm on anything. And so when he told me that he started indicating that he was worried, I started getting worried. And then I said to him, well, we should take her to the doctor, thinking we'll take her to the doctor on a Monday. It was Sunday morning. And we would have to take her into the hospital. And he, when I said that, he looked at me and said, you mean take her into the ER? And that, you know, sent shivers down my spine because he's not the sort of person to overreact to anything. In fact, he always underreacts. And so I strapped her on to my chest in a carrier, and my husband stayed with Hugo at home, and I took her into the ER, and I was in the taxi cab. It was like I was hearing her with new ears, like how the taxi driver heard her, and she sounded awful. But even so, I still kind of had this idea in my head that, oh, we'd get, you know, it'd be a deviated septum or something, and we'd get out of there early enough before the sun was too hot, and we'd be able to walk home. It was a nice morning. But then we get into the hospital, and the cab driver takes us to the wrong door, and I end up going in a back entrance. And by the end of it, I'm sprinting down the hallway because her breathing is becoming more and more labored. And I end up into the triage room without having gone through the normal process of, you know, showing our papers and our insurance card and everything. And I'm staying there, and the doctors are looking at me quizzically, and I didn't realize that I'd, you know, broken protocol or anything. And so they're like, you know, can I help you? And I said, yeah, my daughter, she's having problems breathing. And the room got silent. And then they, about 3 seconds later, they said, take her off your chest right now. And so I'm thinking, well, okay, they're just, you know, they're overreacting. Everything's okay though. I put her down on this adult size gurney, and immediately she's surrounded by about 16 doctors. And this woman comes up to me and she starts questioning me. And she says, well, she's been throwing up all night, hasn't she? I said, no, she hasn't. She was premature, wasn't she? No, she was 40 weeks and 2 days. She's never breastfed, has she? I said, no, that's all she's done. Has she put on any weight? Yeah, she's put on weight. And then I'm looking at her, I was like, well, what's going on? And she said, this is very serious. I said, well, what does that mean? And I'm getting frustrated. And she said, it means that it's very serious. I said, well, is she going to die? I mean, like, let's put some sort of, you know, box around this so I can understand it. And she just looks at me and she shrugs her shoulders. Matt's when I start really freaking out. So I call my husband. I tell him, you need to get down here immediately. And it takes him a while. And by this point, they've gone through different kinds of tests. And they started by saying she had a blood infection. And then ultimately, they tell me that, in fact, they think it's something's wrong with her heart. And so they need to transfer her. They don't do pediatric cardiology at this hospital. So they need to transfer her. And they make very clear that they don't know if she's going to make it in the move to the next hospital. And so they let me have, you know, it's about 3 hours where they're trying to stabilize her and nothing's happening. And finally, they said, we can't wait any longer. She has to go to the next hospital. And they give me about 10 minutes alone with her and to say goodbye. I later realized it was in the event that she didn't make it over. So my husband rides with her in the ambulance. I ride with my son in a taxi following the ambulance, and we get to the new hospital. And although they told us it'd be about 30 minutes, it ends up being like 3.5 hours. And my husband, in his hurry to get out of the apartment with our son, has not brought any diapers, food, anything, any kind of reinforcements. And so after 3.5 hours at the second hospital, my son's in bad shape and we need to figure out what we're going to do. So my husband goes back and says, you know, can someone please tell us what's going on? And a doctor walks out and she's accompanied by another doctor. And when she sees my son, she turns to the other doctor and she says, well, at least they're still going to have one child. And I got the feeling it's like, I don't know if anybody out there has ever sent an email when they shouldn't have. And the second that you realize it, where your stomach just drops and your veins run cold, that was the same sensation I got, but about, you know, times 10. And I just braced myself. And so we walked into this conference room and it's filled with doctors. And they tell us, you know, they finally sit down with us and they tell us what's going on. And they make very clear that her odds aren't good. And honestly, I just remember that point in time and I felt like there was no way out of it. But eventually, you know, that was probably the worst moment in the whole story. And then eventually we would find out that Ari had some brain damage due to lack of oxygen. And at that point in time, I could have never told you that we would be where we are now. But because of that experience, I've never felt worse, and love is never. And it's because of the love that I felt for my daughter. My son never put me through that. And so I know my love for him is deep, but I felt the bottom of it with her in those 2 months that we spent in the PICU, and we almost lost her about 3 times. So
I wish we had more time to listen to this. I really am. But I want to give you a few seconds at least to talk a little bit about this competition that you're in. Annie, you give so much, so much, and you know, you remind me of Shannon Alder, the author of 300 Questions to Ask Your Parents. She says about people, sometimes your light shines so bright that it blinds people from seeing you. But you want to be sure that we listen to what you're about to say, because you really are that kind of a person who just has to be heard. And sometimes I don't think that Ophart and your mission is heard as clearly as it should. Tell us about what's happening over at the Okra Charity Saloon and why we need to know about this.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's a very beautiful thing to say, and I'm going to treasure that. Ophart is competing for a very large sum of money during this whole month of July. I don't know if everybody's heard of Okra before, but it's this great bar in downtown Houston near the Preston Light Rail stop. And every month they have 4 charities that compete for the revenues of the following month because they're a nonprofit. And so it usually amounts to $35,000, honestly. It can be a very nice chunk of change. And for every drink that you order there, you receive a ticket, and then you go and vote for your charity of choice. So if you can come down, drink, please, go drink, and then vote for Ophart, I would be very grateful.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Gosh, that's important. 924 Congress is where Okra Charity Saloon. Thank you, Annie, so much. The stories that you share really do stretch the boundaries of the human heart. Our best wishes to your family, and a special thanks to Ari for giving us the chance to know her. Have you got a little tune for us that you're going to be playing? Shannon's got the song that she's going to be playing. Tellers up next with the inner side to complete the backside. But right now, till next week, I'm Dr. Hank, and I am reminding all of you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.